Well, good morning, Tucson. This, as you can tell, is not Kathleen Wynn. This is Ben Bueller Garcia, normally the host of American Warrior Radio, heard Saturdays at noon here on KVOI, sitting in for Kathleen. As you know, Wynn Tucson is about discussing pressing issues that affect our families, businesses, and neighbors. Our first guest is going to discuss some issues that impact all three, the education of our children. In the second half of the hour, you're going to meet some representatives of a local organization doing things near and dear to my heart. Since 2016, they have raised nearly $1 million for charities that support our military and veterans. So first up, Sherry Few is the founder and president of United States Parents Involved in Education. That's a mouthful. USPIE has established chapters in 20 states and is growing rapidly as many parents are motivated to take back control of their children's education. Sherry is a nationally recognized leader on education policy and executive producer of the new film Truth and Lies in American Education. Sherry, welcome to Wynn Tucson.
Thank you, Ben. I appreciate you having me on.
Now, Sherry, I took a look at your website, and what jumped out at me was the stated vision of the organization, to create a culture where parents empowered with the authority to choose what and how their children learn are the undisputed primary educators of their children, where local schools operate in support of families, and where education is unencumbered by federal mandates. What was your initial motivation behind starting USPIE?
Well, it actually started as South Carolina Parents Involved in Education. That's where I live, in South Carolina. And we were, actually, as a parent, I was concerned about the content of the curriculum in my children's schools. And this was quite a while ago. This was nearly 20 years ago when I began to observe things that were inaccurate in their history lessons, in the sex education that they were trying to push, some very insidious instruction. Again, 20 years ago when my children were in government schools. So that's how it began. And then in South Carolina, we led the fight against the Common Core state standards in 2010. And, you know, we were duped just about like every other state in the nation when we worked really hard to get some legislation passed to end the Common Core standards, only to have it rebranded, and it's still alive and well in every state in this country outside of Florida. Now, Governor DeSantis has recently made a shift away from Common Core, and he's kind of led on some other education policy issues that we can get into. But following the Common Core debacle, I began to communicate with people like myself around the country who had had the same experiences in their state. And that's when we expanded into a national organization, United States Parents Involved in Education. And we chose our mission to close the U.S. Department of Education and end all federal education mandates, because we recognize that this is where most of the nefarious pedagogy comes from. It comes from the federal government, incentivized by federal tax dollars, and school districts just gobble it up because none of them will decline funding.
I will tell you, I never had children, so I am considerably unprepared to talk about a lot of this stuff. So explain to our listeners, what is Common Core?
Okay, sure. So Common Core standards were foisted on the states, and this is a perfect example of what I was just talking about. States were told they would receive federal funding if they adopted these standards that weren't even finalized. State boards of education, if they approved the standards with a grant application for funding, they would receive more points on their grant application. So every state in the nation adopted these standards. There are a myriad of problems with the Common Core standards. One of the biggest things that is a problem with them is that they're developmentally inappropriate for young children. So young children aren't able to think abstractly, and so the standards require that. So it confuses and frustrates young children, which is the foundation for their education, is in those early grades. And children were crying and frustrated and didn't want to go to school. And so this is still happening in our country. There's some ridiculous math. I don't know if you've seen the Common Core math. There are examples out there of it that are just so evident that it's wrong. teaching children very convoluted ways to arrive at an easy math problem rather than the way you and I learned. So this has been going on in our country for about 10 years, teaching these Common Core standards, and we know that the academic achievement rates have plummeted ever since.
Sherry, I think in doing my show prep for this morning, So I grew up, my folks are missionaries, so I was homeschooled the first 3 years, first three grades overseas, and then in the ensuing parts of my life, I attended three different school districts in three different towns. And back then, not only were parents encouraged to be part of their children's education, it was almost required. And I look back, now that was a long time ago, and I look back and say, okay, how did we get here? And people might look at your webpage, folks, you can visit uspie.org, and when they see, okay, we want to eliminate the Department of Education, they might think that's kind of radical, but folks don't realize that's a relatively new thing. I mean, the DOE was established in, what, 1979, 1980? And it's interesting to me, my public school education was wonderful. We actually were taught how to add, subtract, multiply, to think, not just to learn. And then I looked at it, it's like, you know, 1979, that's when I graduated from public school. So things have been not so bueno ever since, I guess, huh?
Well, you're absolutely right. And interestingly enough, that's the year I graduated also. So I'm with you. And I was, and my father was in the military. So we moved a lot and we were in a lot of different schools. And, you know, I do recall the beginning, though, of some of this liberal indoctrination. It did begin in my high school years. That's when sex education started. I don't know if you remember that,
No. But
I remember being in a large auditorium with, I think, the entire seventh grade, and, you know, we watched a film. And so that was the first time ever that they started teaching sex education in schools. So it began in the 60s. It really began there, but where we are today is just so far-fetched from where we were when you and I graduated. It is just in-your-face indoctrination, and they don't even deny it. Well, actually, they do. They try to hide it. They try to say they're not teaching critical race theory, you know, because they've got it embedded in social-emotional learning and lots of different methodologies that they have to get it into the minds of children. You won't find a curriculum or a textbook or anything like that, standards that are critical race theory, but they have gotten very creative in how they get these things into the minds of children.
Sherry, when we come back, I want to follow up on that because I want to talk about your film, Truth and Lies in American Education, and some of the things that were exposed in that film. I think some people are going to find it hard to believe, but it's almost like a hide in plain sight like you're describing. Folks, you can learn more. Visit uspie.org. This is Ben Bueller Garcia sitting in for here on Wind Tucson on KVOI, The Voice, your trusted local news and talk. We'll be back with more with Sherry Few in just a second. Welcome back to Wind Tucson, ladies and gentlemen. This is Ben Bueller Garcia sitting in for Kathleen Wynn. We're talking about education and at least from our guest perspective, how the wheels have come off. And I've got to say, I didn't have children, so I don't know. But certainly as an outsider looking in, you notice it in the press. And I mean, sure, one could almost argue that the Virginia governor's race was all about this. And you've produced a new film called Truth and Lies in American Education. What sort of things are exposed in that film?
Well, we talk about the anti-American history that's being taught. One of the cast members that we interview is Dr. Mary Graybar, who wrote the book Debunking Howard Zinn, which was the number one history textbook in America for about 10 years. So we interview her about the false history that has been taught all over our country through this textbook. It's actually an interesting documentary. You know, a lot of documentaries are just kind of dry, boring interviews, but we've made a storyline out of the film, and my daughter-in-law is actually the protagonist in the film, and we're following her research into what kind of education she'll provide for her children.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to talk over you. There's so much to discuss, I get excited about it. But
Right. Give
me an example of false history. What?
Well, there's a lot of misinformation about, you know, how war started. And, you know, it's just a political bias from the left. And they seem to think that history can be viewed from a perspective rather than teaching facts. So it is the intention of these folks that author these textbooks in history. It is really an intention to cause children to question our form of government, our loyalty, and our patriotism. Children literally come out of school now hating their country. And, you know, we've seen this play across the stage at things like kneeling at national football games when, you know, some of the players would be kneeling during the national anthem. And so these ideas didn't just formulate in these young people's minds. They have been indoctrinated through false history that paints America as, you know, all of our faults are just glaring, and it doesn't talk about anything good about the exceptional quality of our form of government. And you know, we know that people flock to get in America. We know that we are the envy of the rest of the world. And yet, if you were to sit in one of these history classes, you wouldn't think that at all. You would think we're horrible. We have always oppressed people, you know, beginning with the Native Americans and then the slaves. And so that's where all the emphasis is put in these history lessons.
Sherry, you probably reflect my philosophy, having been raised overseas and as a military brat. You mentioned you traveled a lot. If I could be king for a day, I would want every young person in America, sophomore, maybe junior year of high school, to travel to another country, anywhere, even Canada, so that they can get an appreciation of how good we actually have it here in the United States. And just the fact that this is still, and you're right, we are still maybe one of the last bastions of freedom left on the planet. Not my words, but those come from a British actor, Matthew Marson, who was on my show. And I don't want to get too, I mean, what I really meant that when I said this is an issue that not only impacts our families and our neighbors, but also business. If these young people are coming out of high school not able to do simple math, and you know, honestly looking for having excuses for everything, sort of a victim mentality, that doesn't support entrepreneurship whatsoever.
Well, you're absolutely right, and you know, it would be great if children could visit other countries to see how good we have it here in America. You know, our exceptionalism has been played down for decades, but it is real. And that's why we need to get real history back in classrooms. And you know, that doesn't mean that we don't teach the bad things. Of course you teach the bad things, because that's how we learn and we do better, is when we look at history. But we have to look at it accurately and factually, and not just play on all of the problems of our country has. You know, we are a great country. We've had some of the greatest inventions come from American citizens. And we have privileges beyond what any other country could imagine. So, you know, we were talking about the film, and other things that are discussed in the film is critical race theory, and not just critical race theory. There are several Marxist critical theories that are being taught in government schools. There's critical gender theory, critical queer theory, critical feminist theory, and these are all enveloped in something called culturally relevant pedagogy. So this is one of the methods talking about earlier that they use to get all of this into the classroom.
And where did all this come from, Sherry? I mean,
okay, so the Marxist critical theories came out of something that's called the Frankfurt School in Germany. So Marxists who lived in Germany developed these theories in a college they had in Germany, and then during World War II, the Nazis ran them out, and they came to America. And they took up shop in our colleges and universities. They started in Columbia University, and that's where these theories came from. So the theories have been spread out through colleges and universities in our country for decades and are just now trickling down into the K-12 classroom. The colleges of education are steeped in critical theories. So teachers that are being trained to go to the classroom are already fully indoctrinated in these theories before they hit the classroom. And they're even told, you know, this is going to go against the grain. It's going to be difficult, but you got to stand firm and you have to teach what is, you know, important, and just know that you're going to have pushback. And they even train them how to deal with the pushback and how to embed it across the curriculum in every subject and every grade level.
Sherry, normally you see this in the context of the parents versus the school boards. You know, if parents down there pounding on the podium saying, hey, they're my children. I need to have a stronger role in what you're teaching them. But have you found through your research or preparing for this film or just your expertise nationwide, have you found any allies on the inside, teachers or administrators?
Not many, unfortunately. You know, we have some retired teachers, people that have left the profession. You know, they talk about the teacher shortage crisis in our country, and I think it has everything to do with the content of what's being taught. The good teachers are fleeing. They're not going to tolerate teaching this kind of garbage to children. So what we're left with, again, are these young teachers that are being fully indoctrinated in the colleges and universities before they even hit the classroom. So they believe in what they're teaching. So unfortunately, we don't have many allies on the inside. There are some, though. You know, I have to mention, I even have an ally here in my state who's a teacher, but they have to be careful because they are certainly punished. Sure. If they speak or do anything, you know, they can lose their jobs. So that's probably another reason why we don't have a lot of allies on the inside.
I tell you what, Sherry, in my day job, I'm a lobbyist, and I get approached for advice on a lot of campaigns, and it seems so often people who want to help their community, they want to run for mayor or Congress or Senate. And I encourage them that the real critical positions right now in our communities are school boards.
Yeah.
And so let me ask you this. So folks, you can learn more, visit uspie.org. Sherry, what do you want? Where can people see this film, and what do you want them to take away from watching the film?
Okay, so the film, you can purchase a DVD at the film's website, and that is truthandliesfilm.us. It's also being aired on Salem Now, so you can see it there. You can also rent it from the film's website. So you can rent it or buy it, and you can stream it from Salem Now. So again, the website is truthandliesfilm.us. So we want as many American citizens as possible to view this film. And, you know, you mentioned a couple times, Ben, that you don't have any children. And what I like to impress upon people is that even if you don't have children in government schools or even grandchildren, this is an issue that you should be concerned about. And I think that's great advice that you are giving potential candidates, because this is the most pressing domestic policy issue our country is facing today, the indoctrination of children. And if we don't stop the indoctrination, we are going to lose our very freedom. And so that's why this film is so important. I want to get it in the hands of every American. I pray that people will watch it and even do community viewings. We can help with screenings. If anyone wants to set up a screening, we can help with that. So it's just important to get this information out and inform the population that the end goal with this, with these Marxist theories, the sexualization of children, it's all about fundamentally changing our form of government in this country. And if we want to remain free, then we have to get involved. And this is the way to get informed so that you can be motivated to get involved to stop what's happening.
Sherry, we've only got a couple minutes left with you. What does victory look like for you? Or is this an ongoing struggle? Because we've always got to be wary and on our toes about this sort of thing, because it did sort of creep in apparently without many people noticing. So what does a win look like? See what I did there, win Tucson. What does a win look like for Sherry?
Well, a win for Sherry and for Tucson and all of America is, you know, if we can close the Department of Education, that is a huge step in the right direction, because, again, they're the ones driving all of this. And, you know, while states only receive about 10% of their education budget from the federal government, they control 100% of what's happening in the classroom. So that's the big step that has to be made. And then we need to start restoring parental and local control of education so that the curriculum reflects the local community values.
Well, and I didn't realize that was so. Part of this is weaning the state education systems off the federal dollars. And at first I thought, oh boy, how are they going to survive? But it's only 10%. That's interesting.
That's correct. And so that's information we're trying to share with states. And we are actually working with some states to consider this idea of weaning themselves off. by even doing a cost analysis to see how much it costs to comply with all these federal regulations. It may only be about 5% of their budget after you take the cost out.
Sherry Few, thank you for spending a few minutes with our listeners here on Wind Tucson. Again, folks, you can learn more, visit USPIE.org. Check out the film, whether you're whatever side you're on. I agree with what Sherry says. We have to look at all options and just learn for ourselves and choose wisely. Coming up next, we've got two gentlemen who are involved with the Empire Coalition of Tucson. They've got a great fundraiser coming up. They're going to share with us what they're doing here for our community. This is Ben Bueller Garcia. Welcome back to Wind Tucson, ladies and gentlemen. This is Ben Bueller Garcia, normally the host of American Warrior Radio, heard Saturdays at noon here on KVOI. So just giving our next guest a little dig here, but it's okay. Because I host that show, you know, I never served in the military, so supporting those who do, I consider it my duty. And these next two gentlemen that are coming up are doing or have been doing a project that's near and dear to my heart for that reason. We've got joining us here to talk about the Empower Coalition and the upcoming Tucson Beefsteak event, Matt Schmidt, who is the 2023 Beefsteak Chairman, and Paul Volpe, who is the title sponsor. Gentlemen, let's start off. Paul, what is your day job?
I'm in the mortgage business. So that's what I've been doing for the last 25 years.
Feel free to mention the company.
Nova Home Loans.
Okay, thank you very much. Matt, what do you do in your day job?
Yeah, I'm a partner at Schmidt, Sethiak, Majan. We do personal injury law here in town.
Ooh, interesting. So am I going to see your face on the side of a bus anytime soon?
No.
No, that's not your style?
Not our style.
Fair enough. Just a friendly chat.
Word of mouth. Word of mouth.
So I'm involved in lots of support organizations for the military here in Tucson, one of which is I'm the president of the Tucson Community Cares Foundation. And when you had your first Beefsteak event, we were one of the beneficiaries, along with the Purple Heart Foundation, if I'm not mistaken. And I tell you, it was what you – so we're a small organization. We're all volunteer. Our only hard costs are our P.O. box and our bank fees, because we want to run everything that we've got to support those families of the Airmen at Davis-Month and Air Force Base, particularly deploying families. And so that's kind of an organization where a little bit of money goes a very long way. And as I look at, so now I think you've raised either close to $1 million so far for these charities or over that now?
Approximately 1.25.
That's amazing. And how many organizations have you supported over the course of, and you know what's sad is, and I saw this, all of us had to take a couple of years off during COVID, so you missed a couple of years there, but can you give us a sense of how many organizations have benefited from your fundraising?
A little over 10, probably. I can say over that, probably closer to 20, if you include the tricycle race that we did a couple of falls ago. And this year we're supporting 6.
Okay. Now, I tell you, I went, and if folks go and look up empowercoalition.org, there is more information on the landing page of the Central Intelligence Agency than there is at your webpage. Is that by design? And are you guys like a secret handshake kind of organization, or what's going on there?
Well, we primarily communicate through Facebook, and we've had a website in the past, but primarily Facebook.
So tell us about how the Empower Coalition got started in Tucson.
Well, around 2016, the founder and former president, Jim Story, started the organization. I think there were probably about 20-ish of us at the time. It's grown to 39, with a vision to do something to support the local community. Over that year, we developed this program where we raise money to support our local veterans and military.
And the idea for, well, let me back up a little bit. If folks are interested in getting involved, they're not going to find anything on the website. I'm just saying, maybe look into that. But if they can find you on Facebook, if somebody wants to volunteer, is this by invitation only? Do you vet your members? I mean, 39 is a pretty small but powerful group.
Yes, the members have to initiate a potential member, okay. And then there's a process. Again, you can find us on Facebook. You can find our members on that page and go from there. But it is a pretty stringent vetting process, and it's a pretty tough group to get into.
Sure. And I think there's an email address there,
you can email me personally, okay. mschmidt@azinjurylaw.com. That would be a good start. for any information about the Tucson Beefsteak or the organization.
So you put this group together. We want to help organizations. How are we going to do that? And I tell you, honestly, personally, I've been involved with a lot of nonprofits. I despise golf tournaments, especially when you're just getting started. A, everybody's got one in town. B, it's a lot of work for not so much money initially. But when I heard about the beefsteak, I mean, right away, bang, that resonated with me. I mean, go down there and drink beer and eat steak. What could go wrong, right? And I attended the first one, like I said, and I got my little apron, and it was a wonderful evening. So that the idea of a beefsteak did not originate in Tucson. There's a history behind that, correct?
Correct. Roughly in the 19th century, it started in New York. It was a trend where restaurants or banquets or an organization would host this culinary experience where the signature entree was a beef tenderloin on a piece of bread. And as you stated, it was a glutton fest. Mm-hmm. It was all you can eat, all you can drink. And another signature item were the aprons that you would wear to these. And that has grown into the modern day to become a charitable events, primarily the East Coast. But that was the fun thing that we did with the Empower Coalition. We tried to come up with an event that's a little unique, a little different than a golf tournament or a banquet.
Sure. And I tell you, honestly, it's quite the... Now, I don't know if this has changed since the first event I attended in 2016, but it was pretty much all you can eat. Mm-hmm. Still that way?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you get a plate of gluttonous food, beef. I mean, it's not just beef. We've got seafood towers, you know, mixed drinks, beer, wine. It's an awesome social event, and it's a little different than what you see around Tucson with the other events going on.
I'd say it's very different. Now, there's only a limited amount of people, a limited number of tickets to this event, and if folks, where do they go if they do want to get information on getting tickets? Do they have to talk to an Empower Coalition member? Do you do that mostly proactively, or is it, I assume anybody can buy a ticket, right? Or
so that's another unique thing about our event. It is a 750-person event, but it is a private event. So you have to know a member, and you have to get an invite from a member. So one thing I would do is if you're interested, I would go on the Facebook page, look for one of the members. If you know one of us, reach out and say, hey, I'd like to check this thing out.
So that's why I've never been invited back since 2016.
We'll get you back on the list.
I helped clean tables. You know, I did my part. So now, Paula, you've been awfully quiet during this whole conversation. As the key sponsor of this event, what motivated you to put your financial skin in the game on this?
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to, you know, Jim Story had a vision. He came to me many years ago asking me, you know, what the idea was behind it. And I was like, I'm all in. And I've got a soft spot in my heart for the local military. My father was in the Air Force. My uncles were in Vietnam. Grandfather fought in World War II. I try to get into the Air Force Academy. Ended up going the Arizona route. Got my degree in finance. But you know, when my father passed away when I was 19, I was pretty involved with, you know, him going because he was at the National Guard, and I just grew up on base, and you know, kind of a way to honor his memory as well as, you know, everyone that served in this city. And obviously Tucson's a military town, and we know what keeps our community going, and I felt it was important to be involved, and you know, proud to be part of it.
You know, I talked about how for the Tucson Community Cares Foundation, a little bit of money goes a long way. I'm also the vice president of the 9/11 Tower Challenge Foundation. And all the proceeds that we raise every year go to military and first responder charities. And our beneficiary this year was a group called Base Camp for Veterans. Relatively new, relatively small organization. Again, that was someone, the reason our board selected them is we knew, you know, what we gave them was going to go a long way with an organization like that. And when we were out presenting the check to the founders and some of their board of directors, one of the board members is a big, just straight out of Central Casting Special Forces guy. I won't say which branch, but you can probably guess, right? And he was describing, he was in the first class to go through Base Camp for Veterans. And so he comes back every year for the ensuing cohorts. And this hardened Special Forces warrior is describing what an impact this program had on him and these other families. And he started to get choked up. And to be there and to witness that really tells you about the impact of these kind of programs in our community. And I'm wondering, is that when you're considering, how many applications do you get annually? Hundreds, couple dozen? What is the, I'm sure it varies.
Well, so it's an evolving process, but this year for the first time we took in applications and we actually had something called the pitch where the beneficiaries came to our meeting and they told us what they wanted to raise money for and why they wanted to raise it. This year we had six come. We accepted all six. And real quick, we're supporting Honor Flight, which it's near and dear to Paul's heart. Boulder Crest.
Good group.
YMCA of Southern Arizona. Mm-hmm. Esperanza and Escalante. Old Pueblo Community Services. And both of those programs help homeless veterans, which is a big problem right now. And it's something we're proud to help support. And then Project Healing Waters, which is actually near and dear to my heart because it uses fly fishing for therapeutic value to veterans.
Outstanding. So if people, I'm going to go through that because I'm going to, after we're done here, I'm going to email the folks at Base Camp for Veterans, say, hey, you guys need to get on this for next year. So I assume they can, where do you, other than harassing you at your law firm, is there just a generic email box they can go to find out, is there an application online? How do they get started?
Well, for now, they can harass me all they want. Okay. So, M. Schmidt.
Business a little slow?
At azinjurylaw.com. Not slow, but okay. Near and dear to my heart is this cause. Like, you know, so you can bother me all you want when it comes to trying to help veterans.
Okay.
And obviously the Facebook page and any member that's within the group. I mean, we obviously with COVID hitting, I think some of these nonprofits kind of fell off and that we took a two-year hiatus. You know, to get some of these new groups back in, you know, is key. And I think, you know, that's the thing. You just ask and we'll definitely listen and we want to be able to help as long as it's for the right mission. We're there to support.
Okay. I tell you, when we come back, I want to talk more about the event itself and some of the other stuff you did. I did notice on the tricycle race on Facebook, and I you guys are too young to remember this, but when I was going to the U of A, they filmed Revenge.
Yeah, nerds.
Yeah,
of course.
Yeah, and
that's
I remember
what
that.
That's, it.
Okay, perfect. Ladies and gentlemen, Ben Bueller Garcia sitting in for Kathleen Wynn here on Wynn Tucson. We'll be back with more from Mark Schmidt and Paul Bofi talking about the Empower Coalition. Stick around. Welcome back to Wynn Tucson, ladies and gentlemen. This is Ben Bueller Garcia sitting in for Kathleen Wynn. And, you know, Wynn Tucson is all about things that impact our community. And I tell you what, there's a group of 39, now correct me, is it just men, women?
It's all men.
Okay.
Yep.
39 young men who are just having a tremendous impact, particularly with those organizations that support our military and veterans in Tucson. And they go about it in a very discreet and quiet way, but they're hugely impactful. You said over $1 million so far have been raised for different charities. And I've got to say also, you're an all-volunteer organization, so there's a lot of work that goes into this, but it's got to be a little bit of fun too. Right. I mean, when you're there that night and seeing people having a good time, raising money for a good cause, and then you present that big foam check and you can see I hope the gratitude from those organizations.
Yeah, no, it's a party. That's for sure. And that's what we want it to be. Nothing. And it's, you know, raises a lot of money. We've got a lot of good raffles, a live auction. But no, it's different than what you see in different groups around town. And I think that's what sets us apart. But it's definitely a party. Everyone gets, you know, dolled up. The wives get together and get their makeup done and hair done. And, you know, we kind of roll in, probably maybe take us maybe 10 minutes to get ready maybe. But, you know, girls need all day to get that going. So
I don't think you can say that on the air. You're married, right?
I'm happily married.
You should know better than to say that. But it's okay. Fair enough. You're still learning. You're still learning. And that is one of the big departures from tradition. Back in the olden days, I use the quotation fingers, back in the 19th century, this was exclusively a male event, right? It was kind of like boys' night out.
Yeah, and they would rent out a warehouse. And like I said, they'd have community seating. That's another unique thing about our event. We don't really do a lot of reserve seating. You come in, you stake out your spot, and then you go party.
To Paul's point, I see what you did there. Yeah.
We party hard, and then the most rewarding part is in March, we get to hand out checks and watch tears flow from everyone's faces, because that money does go a long way. As you know, a lot of these organizations don't need a lot of money to do what they need to do, but they do need something.
Sure.
So to be able to present that money and give that to them so that they can do their best in the community is what we strive to do.
So the beefsteak event this year is held on what date, where, and they need to go on Facebook and find one of the members if you want tickets, folks, because this thing sells out every year, I'm guessing.
Sells out every year. It's February 18th from 6 to midnight. It's south of the federal courthouse in those gem show tents, mm-hmm. the Norville tents. It's another unique thing about our party is we try to mimic the warehouse feel by the tent starts out as bare bones and we build it up from the floor to the ceiling.
And you can also go to TucsonBeefsteak.com.
Sure.
Check that out as well. You'll see our member names and be able to identify people in the group.
Good point. That's a better place to start if folks aren't accustomed to Facebook. And the first time you had it in 2016 was at Site 17, which is an old warehouse. And so it was perfect. You had the big picnic tables out there and whatnot. Tell us about the tricycle race. What on earth?
So as you stated, I'm not too young for Revenge of the Nerds. I remember it. It occurred here on U of A campus. That's what inspired it. And again, we always try and find events that really haven't been done here before. So we did the first one at the top of the La Paloma parking lot. It supported 12 or 13 of the local charities, including the Conquistadors, mm-hmm. and some of the other big names. And it was essentially a race for a grand prize of $50,000.
Nice.
We had Sugar Ray was there. It was a great event. We hope to do it again.
Now, you may not know this, but one of the characters in Revenge of the Nerds was actually based on our board operator, Matt Neely.
Who would that be?
Booger? Just won't say which one.
Booger, yeah, okay. We can say that on the air. So, and that literally people, I mean, I'm a little guy, so I could actually probably still operate a tricycle, but was part of the idea, literally you get on tricycle and make the route, and whoever... Well, now, was there any...
Yeah, it was a course that was set, and our guys, we trained pretty hard. We were doing some... We identified the most fit guys in our group that would race, as well as other groups. But no, it was pretty wild. You had a couple of tricycles. You know, one broke down, I think, lost a wheel. And it was, you know, everyone had different costumes on. There was guys wearing... I think they looked like Trojans, like Roman Trojans running around, and it was quite the spectacle.
Now, to paraphrase Clint Eastwood, when it comes to a tricycle race, I mean, Fitz got nothing to do with it, but I'm guessing. But was there any nefarious stuff that went on, any sabotage or, you know, spiking people's water bottles or anything?
I didn't witness any. Okay. One again, like the movie, it was a relay race of, I think, four teammates, yeah. And when you finished the lap, you had to chug an 8:05 and then continue on.
You'd expect a lawyer to say that, right?
Oh, yeah.
I did not witness any.
Plausible deniability.
Yeah, there you go. Two of my favorite words. Is there plans? So you do the beefsteak annually. Are there plans to also add a second event or regularly? I mean, will it be the tricycle race or anything? Or is that was just a one-off?
Well, we hope to do the tricycle race again. But again, the unique thing about this organization is I think the sky's the limit. I mean, we always constantly coming up with events or ideas that will intrigue the public because it has not been done here in Tucson before. We did host a dinner at Locale last fall. It was just an all-you-can-eat dinner and wine event for a couple hundred people. And the nice thing about that one was the ticket was your charitable contribution. So we just asked people to show up and have a good time, and we raised a bit of money doing that too.
Now, again, I don't know if you guys are too young to remember this. One thing I'd love to see come back, the Rideau River Regatta. Do you remember that?
No.
Back when I first came to Tucson, of course, the Rideau River doesn't normally flow. And so folks would go down, and they'd get like their dune buggies or jeeps or whatever, and then they'd dress them up like floats to look like ships or boats. And then they'd kind of have a course up and down the river, and folks would come out and watch it and yell and scream and cheer. And it was a good time, but I'm just throwing that out there. Just
we'll add that to the idea list. Yeah.
So Paul is one of the, and with Nova Home Loans, yep. is one of the major sponsors. Are there other, I mean, you've probably got too many to mention, but are there other folks who deserve a shout out this morning, Matt?
Yeah, I'll go real quickly. Obviously, Volpe team, Nova Home Loans, top lender in the state, one of the top in the country. Rob Ossenmacher, just their family, has been a huge support. F45 Training, HSL Properties, Lopin Sunshine Foundation, Predictive Solution Engineering, Casas Adobe's Oral Surgery, Foothills Bank, and Welcon Contractors are the big sponsors. And Paul is our title sponsor and has been for all five beefsteaks that we've had.
You know, and I want to encourage businesses out there listening, if you can't attend the event, if you can't get a ticket, I know with the 9/11 Tower Challenge Foundation, our sponsorship covers all our admin costs, so that way every single climber who's doing the Tower Challenge, we had 4,500 last year, 100% of those proceeds are going to the beneficiaries. So if you're looking to do something to support the military and help out in this community, I'd encourage you to look into sponsoring the beefsteak or the tricycle race or anything else that they've got coming up.
Thank you very much.
Love to have
you. Silence. Okay. A little bit more about, when I'm out there, so now I'm going to share a story because Paul and I were both honorary commanders, and that's probably, like I said, one of the greatest honors of my life as a civilian. And when you go out there and you're on base, and particularly the rescue, you know, people may not know this, but because of the types of mission at Davis-Monde, both the attack mission and the rescue mission and the electronic combat mission, our fams at DM have got a very high deployment schedule, even when we're not in a all-out shooting war in Afghanistan and Iraq. And you may have heard this before, Paul, but when a warrior deploys, the whole family deploys. And the amount of support that is necessary, not just for the members of the military themselves, but their families. And I got to share one real quick story. I know we're running out of time, but really struck me. I was at an event for the Tucson Community Carriers Foundation. It was just a forward deployment, and the families would come in. They'd stuff a little teddy bear, and there's a voice box that would go in each bear. So whenever mom or dad, or whenever the child misses mom or dad who was deployed, they could hug the bear and hear their voice. And here's a family, mom, dad, three handsome little boys. And I said, okay, which one of you is deploying? Because I want to show them how to use the box. And he looked me in the eye and said, I'm going this month. She's going in three. And as a civilian, my head exploded. This entire family was going to war. And I could not comprehend that, but in one mental picture, it defines the kind of support that our military families need. And I'm so grateful to you gentlemen for providing that. I know I've had a lot of very seasoned warriors on my American Warrior radio show, and 99.9% of them, look, deserves got nothing to do with it. I don't expect to be treated special. I signed a contract. Just give me the benefits you promised me and give me a fair shake, and that's good enough. But we all three know that sometimes there's a little extra help needed out there.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I agree. And as you know, I mean, when veterans come back or when soldiers come back from war, there's not always a lot of resources or they don't know where to go. So our hope is always to build that support so that there are more resources for our soldiers and our veterans to get the help they need when they need it.
Absolutely. And so just local or Southern Arizona, is that, what's the threshold for consideration for your beneficiaries? Are there any hard and fast rules?
You said it. I mean, really, we look for beneficiaries that are local. You know, for example, Project Healing Waters is a national organization, mm-hmm. but there is a Southern Arizona chapter. So we're specifically supporting that chapter. Or, you know, like the YMCA. Mm-hmm. We are specifically supporting the YMCA of Southern Arizona.
Well, and Boulder Crest has two facilities. I think the other one's in Virginia or someplace right. back east. But this one here pretty much handles veterans from all the western United States. And what a super program it is down there. They do great work.
Yeah, they do great work with suicide prevention and mm-hmm. just healing and PTSD. It's an amazing organization.
Gentlemen, we're down to about a minute and a half left. You've got the mic. It's all yours. What else do you want to share that I have not brought to the fore here this morning?
Just real quick. I mean, the other cool thing about the beefsteak, we do support some great local causes and prizes. We've got Janos Wilders giving out a dinner. Scordato's giving out a dinner. Pepin Pastries doing some really neat things. So in addition to feeding people, we also give them the opportunity to buy some pretty amazing prizes. Yeah, we look forward to seeing everyone on February 18th.
All right, Paul, anything?
No, just we're proud to be part of Tucson community. I think, you know, Tucson's a very giving community. I've always felt that the more you give, the more you get back. And, you know, it's an awesome, amazing experience. And I hope we can get some more support out there.
Outstanding. Gentlemen, thank you for coming on. Ladies and gentlemen, Ben Bueller-Garcia for Kathleen Wynn here on Wynn Tucson.